Blog Talk Radio.
The streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your host, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is January 26, 2011. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the streets don't love you back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight. We have Mr. LaFell Jackson out of Little Rock, Arkansas. He's a former leader of the original Gangster Crips and is now a gang interventionalist. So he's going to tell us his story in a few minutes about how he was able to change his life. Right now, I'm going to welcome Boyd to the show.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, and we thank you for all tuning in every Wednesday night to the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. And like my missus said, we have a great show tonight, and we're going to bring that to you like we promised you all. And without further ado, we're going to introduce Mr. Jackson, and he will formally introduce himself, and we'll get the show on the road.
Outstanding. How you guys doing today?
Everybody's great, brother.
Right. Well, it's an honor to be, you know, to be on the show tonight, and hopefully we can get some good information out and that will help change some people's lives, or at least steer them in the right direction.
My man.
Well, if you could tell us first, you know, go back to your childhood and tell us a little bit about how you grew up, how you actually got involved in gangs and drugs, and kind of your journey. We'll just start from the beginning.
Well, that's a long way back. You know, I was actually, to be honest with you, I was raised differently. I was raised with both of my parents, where, you know, today's kids, the majority of them that end up getting involved in troublesome things, one parent home. Well, I had both of my parents, and both of my parents were very loving parents. But we did have some underlying issues also, just like so many other households. And one of them was, we were the place where everybody would come and drink, and, you know, in my bed, and would drink, you know, have drinks, so, and visitors all of the time. And my mom, she was a very stern person. She actually ran the home. My dad was a real loving person. You know, I always say that he cursed, you know, that I got two things. I got my dad's heart, which, you know, has saved my life and almost cursed me all at the same time, because you could come from out of state anywhere and my dad and come to my house, and my dad would ask you if you need some food, a place to lay your head, and he would give you that. Well, my mom, she was a little different than that now. She was, you know, you had to show her something. So I had two parents, but once again, at an early age, I was, kind of surrounded by a family of alcoholism and drugs. So at an early age, I started using drugs, you know, and I've got to tell you, because a lot of people don't really get the concept. When I was very young, we used to go hunting every week. That's how we would get our meats and stuff, you know. And I never forget, as a kid, we would go into the woods, and when we would get to the woods, it would be cold. My dad would say, okay, you all right? And I'm, yes, sir. So we get in the woods a little bit. I say, I'm kind of cold. And he would say, okay, well, take a little drink of this, and this will warm you up. And he'd pull out his Seagram 7 and give me a little drink. Now, needless to say, by the time we went in the woods and hunted and come back, I was drunk. at an early age. And my father had no idea the impact that that would have on me as I got older, because him being an alcoholic passed his genes down to me. And so I was early addicted, you know, I had an addiction at an early age, and I went on to use other real hard drugs at a very early age. So, you know, he blessed me with his heart, but he cursed me with the addiction. And so I always said that my dad was just a great man. He blessed me and cursed me. So at an early age, I kind of started dibbling and dabbling in with other drugs and marijuana and all of the other stuff came on. So I found myself addicted to drugs at the age of 9 and 10. My mom didn't understand it. So she took me out to the state hospital, and they kind of put me in the state hospital and to see what was going on. Well, I gave them some medicine, and the pills that they gave me would make me just fall out and go to sleep and just be just totally out of it. I liked it that, though. I really did. I really liked it then, and I never forget. One day the doctor came in and said, well, I told the nurse he wanted to see this young man. It was a new doctor. He wanted to see this young man that was taking these pills. When they told him I was a young kid, he immediately said, we've got to get him off these drugs. These drugs are for a man over 300 pounds.
Wow.
And I'll never forget. I think I was about 11, 12. They took me in the scene and took me off the drugs and gave me some lower doses. Well, I left the next day. I immediately stopped going, you know, I wouldn't go back because I wasn't getting what I wanted, which was the drugs for it. So the drugs played real early in my coming up. Drugs was one of the biggest things that I think that took me down a crazy road. And from there, you know, I went on to get involved in robbing, and you know, where most places, like on the West Coast, a lot of young men my age raised up, you know, really involved in the gang thing. But I was raised, you know, involved in the drug and the robbing thing, because that's what hanging around my brother. Papa DeWitt, for those who've seen the HBO documentary Banging Little Rock and Back to the Hood, he was like the gangster at the time, and I would, you know, hang with some of his friends who would. Then I learned the robbing game at a real early age, and I'm just briefly bringing us up so we can really get to some real good questions and answers about some of the things that's going on today. So I'm kind of moving a little fast on it, but DeWitt used to be my idol. Him and my other brother, Ivory, they were like, in the neighborhood, they were very respected. And us being one of the first blacks to move in our community, it was crazy to see DeWitt, you know, react the way he did. So I really took on that gangster mentality at an early age. But as I got older, I had this other thing that I loved doing. I loved the cooking. I loved to cook. And I went on to become the junior chef for the year for about 3 years straight. But I also had another underlying issue, which was the drug addiction. And my reading and writing wasn't there. You know, when I would go to school, my mom would tell me, you know, baby, you just go to school and you're going to be great. And, you know, that's what I did. I didn't try to learn anything. I would go to school. And a lot of times I would stay in the gym all day. Well, needless to say, that didn't help me at all in the field that I really loved, which was cooking. I could do ice carving. You just draw me out a sketch, and I could do an ice carving of whatever you wanted, you know, you would draw me out. When it came down to reading and writing, I just really wasn't there. So that played a big part of me taking the drug way out. And so and as I got older, you know, I went through the drug thing. I said, you know, really got heavily into using drugs, cocaine and whatever drugs I could use. I smoked Sherm, and I'm telling you, whatever drug you name, I did it. And never forget, my brother was like, you know, I was like, well, I got to get away from this. And at that time, I was about 23. No, I was about 26. 27, and I never forget, I said, well, I'm going to have to get away from here. And I left, I'm going to go to California, you know. All young men that come from, like, inner cities or small states, you know, when they think of leaving and becoming something, they want to go to New York or California, you know. And I always remember the Hollywood sign, you know, way before the computer thing really jumped on. Well, I went to California. To make me a move. I wanted to be a professional chef. I mean, I wanted to be the best chef that there was. And on our way to when I got to California, and my brother DeWitt came and picked me up, we rolled right past the Hollywood sign. I'm like, where are we going? You know, this our neighborhood? We ended up in Watts. In the projects. In the PJs. And that's when I really had an opportunity to see what the real gang life was about. And I can tell you right today what drew me in. And it was, I seen this one guy get shot, and he was shot because he said that some other bloods had took his car, and he was like, you know, I love my hood, and he pulled out his gun and he shot himself. And this other guy was like, oh, goodness, they put him in the car about 3-4 days later. You know, I'm laying out on the back smoking some Sherm, and I seen the dude get back out of the car. It was the same dude that had shot himself. And he had a Band-Aid, a big thing wrapped around his head. And I never forget, as he walked over to this other young dude, he put his arms around him, and he hugged me, squeezed him, and he said, I love you, cuz. That had me right there. It was, you know, that had me right there. I knew whatever they had, I wanted it, because my dad raised me that, you know, me having six brothers and one sister, that a man shouldn't be hugging on another man. And if you did, you were, you know. So at that point there, you know, it was hard for me to remember the times when I would hug my brother, any of my brothers. So that's kind of a brief history of me, you know, up to California before I got involved in the gangs. I started getting in some trouble out in California, and I had to leave. I came back home. Well, I immediately, when I came home, I said, okay, I don't want to get high anymore, you know. And I stopped getting high. I mean, just one day, just stopped getting high and started selling drugs. And in the midst of that, I remember some of the things that I've seen out in Southern California. And with the robbing skills that I had, I'm like, okay, you know, I'm going to get paid. And I, with that and some of the things that I learned in California, like, you know, hey, this is the territory. This is mine. You know, you don't come here. You don't sell nothing. You know, when you buy from here. You buy from us. You know, you don't come from no other neighborhood and sell. And that's how I was. And to the extent to where I was definitely a millionaire over again. And my whole motto was, if you get me, you know, I'll spend my money or whatever I had to get you back. And that's what made me a very dangerous person, because that applied to everybody. And, you know, after that, briefly controlled the neighborhood, did things. And I actually, to be honest with you, thought that I was helping my community for a while, because I would buy, you know, clothes for kids to go to school, and I would take some time. I remember one time we took about 70 kids skating, and we would do that every 2 weeks if they did good in school. And so I was doing that, and I would spend some time, $25,000 just on fireworks and put them out on my porch for the kids to pop on the 4th of July. So I was doing things. But I was also killing my community by selling drugs to the same people who I professed that I loved. I was selling cocaine, and I know it was killing them. And for the kids that I would buy clothes for, I would have my way with their parents, you know, with the mama, and whenever I wanted to. So, you know, it took me a minute to understand that, whoa, I'm killing my community. I'm the worst parent that my community could have ever had. But it took me to see that, you know, and it took me to go to federal prison and sit down in the cell and go back and view. Well, actually, when I was on the street, I tried to do some things, but it took me to go to prison to realize, man, I was killing my people in my neighborhood that I loved. And, as you know, so it, you know, and every time I get to that, it just really bothers me because I keep it real. And one thing about it, you don't keep it real with yourself. Can't nobody else keep it real with you. And I was killing my people, you know, you guys, and I felt totally bad about it. And I'll never forget, I was in federal prison with another homeboy, and I was like, you know, because when I go home, I'm going to do something totally different. I really want to not see any more of any of you guys come to prison for this. And I remember him telling me in the cell one day, he was like, man, you lost your mind. You know, them young dudes follow you all around the world. You go back out there with that, you can forget about it. I never forget that. Well, this same young guy who told me that, he had to do federal time, and then he was going to go back to the state to do life. And as he was in the state doing life, I'll never forget, he said he picked up a newspaper, and there I was. And it inspired him to start a program in the prison system called the Unity Program, which helped, you know, bring gang members across all lines together to talk and to reach back out to the streets to help the kids. So, you know, that's a brief story on where I was and what I did and where I am now. I have an after-school program that runs year-long where I help young men and women have a safe place, a safe haven to go. You know, I would always say when people would ask me, well, what can we do with these kids? I would say, you know, if you keep them off the streets and find them a way to go, I won't come looking for them. And with that, that's my whole thing. I have a safe haven for our youth, and I feed them and give them an opportunity to be a kid like I didn't have the opportunity because I was so into drugs and things. So I'm kind of, you know, at this point, me raising these kids, with some of these kids and some of my homeboys who are OGs in my set now, some of their kids are there at my center, and I'm raising them to become young men and young women and that has, you know, got back, that is getting into our communities, that's becoming pillows in our communities, going out and going to, you know, have two that I know of the families that went to war, went to Iraq, and I have some more that went to college. So we're producing great kids, man. I realized that I had the right idea. I was just focused the wrong way.
All right.
So with that,
you said you struggled with reading and writing as a teenager and young adult. How were you able to get the help to be able to read and write as well as you do?
It was me. It was me not wanting to learn to read and write. Well, when I was in federal prison, that's what I learned. You know, and I had to teach myself because they didn't have programs there for that. And I would, you know, I started kind of like, think about Malcolm X. I got me a dictionary, and I started with the A's. And I would go, when I would go to the restroom, I would practice a word a day. And I would use those words in different sentences. Until I got to where, as about 4 years down, I was doing law work, helping people work on their cases. You know, so I excelled really fast. It's just that I didn't ever give myself an opportunity to.
Right.
And but now I'm, you know, I'm pretty good. I have a good understanding of reading and writing and arithmetic to the extent that where I'm about ready to go back to school.
Oh, that's good. Now, the group that you have right now is called ROCAN, and it stands for Reaching Our Children and Neighborhoods. And talk a little bit more about that.
Well,
it's an after-school program, pretty much.
When I did come home from prison, I did 10 years, and because I was a shot caller, they sent me to 5 different prisons. I started off at FCI Memphis and went from there to, they stopped me over at Lewisburg USP in Pennsylvania. And from there, I went and did 2 years up in Raybrook, New York. From there to Forest City, Arkansas, and I did my last 2 years in Siegelville, Texas. And I came home, I'll never forget, I came home and a young man that I had been... I met before a senator. He gave me an opportunity and kind of plugged me into where I was able to. I worked with him first as his administrative assistant, and went from there to over to a team that was created. It was actually created by a judge who I had talked to back when I was banging, and she came over to my neighborhood and she was like, you know, LaFell, what could we do to help keep the kids off the street, as I said, and I just told them to find them a place to go. Well, the same judge created a program called the Our Clubs, which is all across Pulaski County in our state. Well, I got a job at the Our Club. They hired me, and I had an opportunity to take 2 jobs. One was that job at the one that I'm at now, which didn't pay much. Or another one that was out in what we call Southwest Little Rock, which paid like $5 more. Well, immediately when I walked in there and seen the need, I knew that's where I was supposed to be. So that was in 2001. I worked there under the Our Club umbrella for about 4 years, and the funding was pooled. And at this point, you know, I'm loyal, and I had told the kids I wouldn't just never leave them. Like, because that's one thing that they would always say, well, everybody come around, I always leave. And I'm loyal to my word. I've always been. And I said, I'm not going anywhere. So that's when I started filing for my nonprofit. And we just kept going. So we changed it from the Our Club over to Rockin' in 2005. And what we do there is when the kids come in, first thing we do is, like I said, we give them a safe haven. And then we feed them. And then we give them you know, an opportunity to work with their homework. We take them on tours when we have the finance. We went to the Civil Rights Museum in Memphis. It was amazing. It didn't only blow them away, it blew me away. So as a kid, these are things that I never did, you know. So I'm kind of living my life by helping them stay kids. And that's, you know, probably one of the most important things. You know, people talk about education, and I'm a believer that if you can't listen, if you can't pay attention, you know, if your behavior is just totally bad, you can't get an education. So there we really work on them, giving them an opportunity to be themselves, be kids, deal with peer pressure in an environment where there's adults, to where it's no guns, and they learn at an early age how to deal with if somebody step in your space versus bust them upside the head. You know, your words are very powerful if you know how to use them. So that's kind of the whole concept behind Rockin'.
Right. Well, that's an awesome program that you have, and I know that you have a video out talking about the different things that you may need as far as supplies. And can you just let everybody, the listeners, know a number that you could be reached at if they have any donations as far as computers, desks, chairs, books, anything like that.
Yeah, and what they can do is we've also created a extension on Facebook, and they can go to and look up LaFell Jackson on Facebook, and that we have Rockin' now. It's R-O-C-A-N, a Facebook for Rockin', and And they can go there or they can give us a call at 501-247-7401. And the P.O. Box is P.O. Box 2368, Little Rock, Arkansas, 72114. No, 72203. And they can contact me by any means. And a lot of times I'm on Facebook because I like to show people what's kind of going on in our community because, you know, people, we're so used to things being hid in our community. And I want to be one of the, you know, people that expose everything that we're doing and show the people around that these kids that they say at risk are really going to be our leaders someday.
Amen for that, brother. You know, and I just want to say when you was in the gang life and doing things like that, I heard the part about when you came home. But what really touched you deep down inside, the first thing to start making you want to make that change?
Well, you know, there was a lot of things. But actually, before I went to prison, I had already felt, you know, I'd seen so many young men die. So many young men and women just, you know, get killed. And of course, you know, people always say, oh, you know, that's part of the job. But on the flip side of it, there was some young men and women that I was in prison with, not women, but young men that I was in prison with that was supposed to have the black heart. But at the end of the night, they would cry like babies, you know. Let me tell you, if you've never, ever seen anyone get shot and killed, if you've never been in an environment, don't think that it's something that you just want to see and it's cool the way it is masked on television, because that's just television. You know, to see somebody get killed up close, like, believe it or not, so many of our young men and women do in our community, it has an effect on you. And what we have is a lot of young men that say, oh, no, man, I've seen this happen, and they'll try to play it off. But it really bothers them. You know, it bothers them to the extent to where they normally end up either in prison or dead because they're not able to deal with it. They're not able to come forth and say out of their mouth, that bothers me. That really bothers me to see a young man get killed like that, be it there with red, blue, whatever. So I've seen so many young men and women get killed on the street, so that played a big part in that. And my babies, all of my kids were raised as gang members. And I knew that eventually one of mine would be there, you know? And so many people died around me, and bullets passed right by me and hit other folks. And I knew something was going on. And I'll never forget. Now, some people might not even trip on this, but I never forget one day, it was going over into the evening, and it was raining real hard. And it was a girl and a guy who I was going to get, and I had a 243 Winchester, I'm thinking 243 Winchester, with a scope on it. And I never forget, I went over in this neighborhood and went through this alley, and I had laid down, and it was raining really hard that day. And they both was on the front porch. They had got out of their car. And they were going in, and they stopped, and they was kissing on the front porch. And I had them right in my crosshairs. And I never forget, I felt something. And I turned around, and it was a dog. And he was sitting there looking at me like, what are you doing? You know, and it brought, you know, and right at that point, you know, I'm looking in a rain running down my face, and I'm sitting there, you know, and I'm mad. I'm furious. And at that point, I realized that that rain that was running down my face was mixed with some tears. I got up, got my gun, and I said, thank you. Whoever, you know, because I have no idea why this dog would come there and just look at me like that. And at that point, I said, you know, and I went back, got in my car, and I never forget, went home, and I was like, I got to do something different. And at that point, we start cleaning off this place to become a safe haven for, you know, and I had contacted a couple of the other OGs from, like, the Blood neighborhood and say, hey, we're going to do a safe haven over here for our kids. Y'all do one, and let's make that off limits. And at that point, we put together what we call a peace tree with the Senate, with this guy who was a senator, Bill Walker. We put a peace tree up in a Crip neighborhood. Actually, it was Wolf Street Crips neighborhood. We put a peace tree up, and this tree started out, and we made it sacred ground and open for the Bloods to go there without getting hurt. And this tree started off about, the 17th of December. By December the 25th, it started off blue, with all blue ornaments, and some of the ornaments read, you know, increase the peace, you know, things like that. The amazing part of it was, by December the 25th, this tree was red and blue. So there was a lot of things that, you know, touched me, that gave me that inspired me to make the changes that I did.
That's great, my brother. You know what I mean? And we just appreciate, man, that brothers across the country can understand the effect that they do in their neighborhoods and take initiative to step up and realize, you know, hey, I was one of the ones that was a cause of all of this madness in the neighborhood, and turn around and do something about it, man. So I have to give you hats off for that, man, you know what I mean, for intervening in other people's lives where you showing them, like, this is real life. I've lived this. I've done that, and I've changed, and you can change too as well, you know. So I just wanted to give you big shout-outs on that, bro, you know.
Hey, look at me. You know, at the end of the day, we have to understand also another thing, you know, and this is something that Dr. King said, and I never understood it until after I had came home from prison. And he said, you know, with us, it's not violence or nonviolence. With us, it's nonviolence or nonexistence. And if you apply that to three dudes in a car doing a drive-by shooting, killing two dudes, these three young black men or white men or whatever going to prison, that's taking five young men out of our community. Nonviolence or nonexistence. Stephen Wojcik, who was our coroner at that time, explained something to me, that he was contacted back during that time because our murder rate had way exceeded per capita that in California and New York, and that the Centers for Disease had contacted him and told him that he had to start now calling in when a young man over the age of 12 and under the age of, I think it's 29, got killed or shot because the young man in our community was becoming extinct. Isn't that amazing? You know,
exactly.
And they were becoming extinct by their own race.
And that's the bottom line, you know. And we have some callers on the line, and we're gonna go to these callers. We have a caller, last four digits 8267.
Yes.
Hello, you on the air, caller.
I'm here. Hello.
Okay, would you like to ask Mr. Jackson any questions?
Well, I think he answered it really well. I really appreciate hearing everything that you had to say, and I really enjoyed it. And we go a long way back, but I know when we were going to school together, I had no idea he was acted like that, but it was a shock when I got a chance to see things. I guess I was living in California at that time, gang banging in Little Rock, and then I was like, I know him. I don't believe that. Not him, you know. But he still was always a gentleman about a lot of things, so we didn't really, I didn't never know. But I'm just proud of him that he changed his life around and he's able to help other people.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Well, we're definitely glad that you called in and, you know, keep up the great work that you do as well and, you know, keep doing God's will. And we're going to go to the next caller. And that last four digits is 7550.
Hello.
Hello, caller. You on the air?
Hi. Is this Boyd?
Yeah, this is Boyd. And would you like to ask Mr. Jackson a question?
Yeah, well, I don't have a question. I just want to make a comment about, well, I don't know when it was, 3-4 years ago. I was watching HBO, and I saw that documentary, Banging in Little Rock. Well, I live in Texas. I wasn't raised. I knew about gangs only from TV, just like Mr. Jackson said. And so when I saw this show, I mean, it touched me so deeply. It took me, something in me, God spoke to me and said, you need to find him and you need to talk to him. It took me 2 years to find him. There were so many people on MySpace and all these other places pretending to be him. When I finally got in touch with him, I'm a librarian at a church, a volunteer librarian. I said, hey, I get books all the time. Could I please send you some books? He gave me his number and address. I sent him the books. He graciously accepted. And then when I got on the phone with him, I said, I just have to talk to you. I said, what did you see? Why did you change? How did you do it? And he was, and I was so taken aback that he was so soft-spoken. And just like the young lady said, so loquacious. He said, well, you know, it's just, he said, it's not like, you know, I didn't know what I was doing was wrong. And so I just decided to change. And when you change, you just do what you need to do, just like I did what I wanted to do the other time. And he just touches me so deeply. I was talking to a young lady. I'm a tutor. I'm a teacher. And she was trying to understand a hero's journey. And I said, well, you know, a lot of us don't get to know heroes in our lifetime. And when we get to know a hero, we may not even know when we see one. And to explain the story of Odyssey for her, I use LaFelle as an example. And this little girl who lives in a rich community, she almost came to tears. And she asked me, she said, could I find him? Could I talk to him? And I said, well, I asked him. I said, but, you know, heroes don't always start the way you start. You trying to understand Opius and his or whatever the character's name, I can't remember, I may be calling it wrong, and how he became a hero.
Right.
I said, but if you ever met someone, and when you see where they start and where they end up, and sometimes they're in the places that you and I can't ever go. I said, because I couldn't identify.
Right.
I was watching the show going, why are they doing it? Look at those kids. Why don't they stop? You know, that's my whole thing. And I didn't get what the shooting was about. And then when they finally, someone finally came truthful, and LaFelle, he never, the years I've been speaking to him on the phone, never gave an excuse for his behavior or a reason or tried to justify his actions. He always spoke with such, you know, just truth, just stood on his truth and lived by his truth. And I was explaining this to the young lady. And I said, now when you know, I said, sometimes you won't know a hero. I said, but you know, when she was trying to help, when I was trying to help explain that story to her, I immediately diverted to LaFelle. And she, her and her brother both, he was jumping around the table. When I started speaking about LaFelle, he stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And they both were speechless. And she said, well, can I give his name and number to my teacher? Because they live in Sugarland, Texas. They have a 6-bedroom
mm-hmm.
house. Their father and mother's a business people. You know, I said, I don't even think I could do it. You know, when you're called to do something and you do it and you don't want to do it, I said, see, you can go to mom and dad and they can bail you out and they can do this and that. But what if you didn't have any help? What would you do?
The man that makes it all happen, the creator.
Right. And,
you
know, a lot of us may not.
I want to come in on that just a second.
Sure.
Because, you know, I also, regardless of how hard I try right now, without the support and hearing the stories of those who believe that I can continue to do what I'm doing, I think that, you know, way back I maybe would have started doing something totally different. You guys help. You're like the nectar that I need to continue to move forward. So thank you for even, you know, utilizing my story to explain to your babies, you know, the people that you love. To me, I think that's awesome, okay?
Yeah, that was the best one. That's the only thing I could tell her, because she was looking at me like, what's the answer? You know how kids are in school. They just want to know, well, just give me the answer so I can get my homework right. I said, have you ever even met a hero? Do you even know? I said, you may consider your dad a hero because you can run up down the stairs. You don't have to run. You can pick what you want to eat today, or you know, you can go to this room or that room. You know, I said, but have you ever met someone that may not had a mom and dad, or may have a mom and dad, or may have been put in a situation where they had to do things that they never thought they'd do, and then go back to the same place where they started and be different because they want to? And then get the same respect from the people and get the respect. That's what, you know, no, with no guns, no knives, and people respecting him, not calling him out of his name, not, you know, like, oh, you're not a tough guy now, so, what, you know, anything, any of that business. The same people that he was, you know, doing the banging with, now he's doing, you know, that's the, in some respects helping him with the building. You know, I said, well, could you do that? I said, could you do it if you were called to? If no one asked you to, you know, would you do it? You don't know.
Right.
I said, see, and that's the thing. We don't know until we take that step. You know, and I'm just in awe of him every day. I am just in awe of him, you know, every day.
Well,
to sit there and to see what,
we definitely,
you know,
appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah, and
we definitely appreciate you calling tonight and getting that up. Well, you know, so I hope the fans and the viewers that's listening heard exactly what the young lady spoke on tonight and take that as a, you know, a good listening piece and use it to your good advantage for learning, you know? So we appreciate you calling in tonight.
Thank you, and same to you, and thank you for the, having this show. This is great.
Oh, thank you very much. And we're going to go to another caller. Last four digits is 3632. We got a 3632 on there?
No, I think they hung up.
Okay, well, we're going to keep the show moving and everything. Any shout-outs you would like to give Brother Jackson?
Well, my shout-outs, I'd like to give a shout-out to just everybody who had the courage to step forward and step out of the box and really tell the truth about, you know, what's kind of going on in their lives. I'm not the only one. You know, there's a lot of people now that's really seeing that and coming around that's just doing very positive things. A lot of people that have been down the same road that I have, you know, gang members from California all the way out to Philly. I met some young guys out and some girls out in Newark who were, and you're talking about banging, you know, just you would think that it was Cali all over again. You know, my shout out is to those, you know, the young lady and man that I met at the gang symposium who, you know, gang members who came to have an understanding of what was going on and try to, you know, find a way to make their streets better. It's not just, you know, it's not just me, but it's people stepping out of their box all across this country saying, hey, you know, we're becoming extinct. We're killing each other and stepping out. So my shout out is to all of those young men and women who had the courage to step outside the box and do something different and help put things back into their community.
Amen. We appreciate that. We're having a great show tonight with my man, Mr. Jackson. We're going to go to a commercial and a song, and we're going to come right back with Mr. Jackson. Hold tight.
this guy that we knew, we gave him some meth and he went to shoot it up, and he died. We left his house, and a few weeks later we found out that killed him. Like, he was up in his room, and his dad went up there, and he was dead. My name is Bob. I'm 16 years old. I started doing meth when I was 9. I regret when I was on meth, giving it to little kids, like 12-year-olds and stuff, selling it to them. I forget, like, helping cook it. My little brother sees it, like, when I'm doing it. He sees it sometimes, and I think he doesn't know what it is, but I think he thinks it's, like, a cool thing to do, and got to be grown up to do it. I tell him how bad it is and tell him that it really ain't that cool, and just try to explain to him that it's not fun, that it'll ruin his life.
Brought to you by the Arizona Meth Project.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is BOYD and Struggle coming straight at you, baby. Much love to my homeboys up in Detroit, off Van Dyke and Harbor. Much love goes out to my homeboys in Cincy that's always kept it real. And to your player haters, this goes out to you.
No need to look any further. Look like brother, what you thought? Boy, Rex is knocking you out like Robert Tussin, does it go? Made you pull up with this northern exposure. Smoking doja, and I'm coming on the real. Yes, the real, I thought I told you. And I'm keeping it to your bloodstream just like HIV. Stand away from all them player hating people with degrees. It's time to come up. Brother, you better not run up. Because you put your faith and your prayers into another man's head. That move is bogus. Struggle's here to let you know this. That you never ever be a part of the dope. Who put your faith in the spot? Who cooled it off when it was hot? Who made it live when it was weak? Now you can't even speak. It's time to nut check. Time for respect. Time to break neck. You want it out for family. Now it's time for you to get. And you chasing waterfalls. It wasn't meant, fool. In other words, you played yourself. Now who's cool? Hey, yo, you played yourself. No, you played yourself. Hey, yo, you played yourself. You played yourself. Hey, yo, you played yourself. Wait a minute. You played yourself. Because you didn't play the cards that was dealt. Partner, you played yourself. You tried to engage yourself with some people who didn't have no freaking wealth. So hide your health. Ain't nothing good gonna come out your freaking game. Because everything you do bad gonna come back twice the pain. Who's to blame? Listen to the black rain. About to shake the ground for all you black stabbing people in this town. I'm known to bring the anger, make you hiss like a snake. Here's a hint from my partner.
Take it down in your face.
Hey, yo, I'm biggity back up in you too. That's like you like a chemist. You played yourself, and I was a witness. Your career's finished. Don't be misled by the words that I speak. I keep it real. You had a taste of both sides. Now how it feels.
Hey, yo, you played yourself.
No, you played yourself.
I said you played yourself.
You played yourself.
Hey, yo, you played yourself.
Wait a minute. You played yourself, because you didn't play the cards that was dealt.
You can be as good as the best of them, and bad as the worst of them, but don't test me, brother. No, brother, don't test me, no.
You be like that Benedict on the backstabbing brother behind my back. But in my face, you be like Struggle, yo. Where the party at? I be like push on. Get on, get out my face, partner. Cause ain't no love lost, and ain't no love here neither. I can't believe that you betrayed me. Took food from my baby, but you have been acting kind of shady lately. So I got to push you to the curb, fly away like a bird. Partner, you need to stop smoking all that herb. If you would've came to me, Imano, Imano, we would've squashed it at the gate. But you chose to segregate. Play a hate, get it straight. Partner, you played yourself.
No, you played yourself.
Hey, yo, you played yourself.
You played yourself.
You played yourself.
Wait a minute, you played yourself. Cause you didn't play the cards that was dealt.
Brother, relax your mind and let your conscience be free. Get down to the sounds of struggle and I'll be. Your negativity be struggling against my surface. Cause the things that I did for you, your ass can deserve it. Now I'm on some payback for the things you did like way back. Answering all your questions like my name was Bat Sajak. Jesus had 12 disciples and one wasn't truth. And he knew, like I knew, I never ever should have messed with you. So I'm gonna do what I gotta do and then some. If a brother try to flex, I take his life for ransom. Even when I'm by myself, I roll with a crew of soldiers. Sick as fluid soldiers. Known to turn your body black and blue. I told you, why did you test me? I'm the one who put you on. See, if it wasn't for me, you'd be like a mobile phone or wrong cheek. It ain't no me and us. It ain't no he and we. I thought we would be together like OJ and AC. You were that brother I pulled a trigger for. You a freaking beard for. Now you just that off-brand nigga role. You played yourself. No, I said you played yourself.
Hey, yo, you played yourself.
No, partner, you played yourself.
Hey, yo, you played yourself.
Wait a minute. You played yourself. Cause you didn't play the cards that was dealt.
You can be as good as the best of them and bad as the worst of them. But don't test me, brother. No, brother, don't test me, no.
Why did you test me, Gangster? I told you don't ever tempt me. But now I gotta come at you for real now. You should've kept it real. But when you don't keep it real, it's shit in your life. But you should have understood. So why did you play yourself, player? I look at you all the time when you don't think I see you. I see you. Us boys up north, baby. We got our own way of dealing with player haters.
Hey, hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome right back to the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. Well, we're kicking it tonight with my man, Mr. Jackson, and he's definitely putting that knowledge out there for you. And like we said, once again, we hope you're definitely receiving that knowledge, because closed mouth definitely don't get fed. So we definitely are hoping you are eating the knowledge up that's being presented tonight, you know. So we'll get right back to you, Mr. Jackson. And what would you like these youths and others to know, and what advice would you leave with them tonight?
Well, I guess, you know, some of what really sticks, and this is a question that I get so much, is, you know, Mr. Jackson, you know, from what we hear, once you get involved in the game, you can never get out. You know, you always have to bang. I can assure you that you don't have to bang all of your life. There's a way to get out, believe it or not. There's a way to do something totally different, you know. And what this is what I see coming from a gang leader's standpoint. When I was at the top of my game, what would offend me in my set? And that's what I'm putting back here to tell you that, you know, a way out is, first of all, don't talk down about where you come from, because the last thing you want to do is cause harm to anyone. And normally when you come from a neighborhood, you're going to have family members there. And, of course, if you downplay the gangs and say the gang is this and the gang is that, your families are still in those communities. I always say, you just take yourself and start doing positive things. If there's a boys club in your neighborhood, if there's whatever youth programs in your community, if there's some way you can become a volunteer or something where you can give back to your community and start just doing positive things, I'll show you. Gang members, they won't miss you, because if they're banging, they still got to watch out for other gang members, law enforcement, baby mama drama. It's a whole lot that they have on their plate versus to come looking for you because you're not there. But not only will you get out and do things, when they see you and say, hey, you know, that's my homeboy. He's working for the mayor, or he's working for the governor. Man, then they'll see you on the street. You know, I want a job. I want to do something different. And I get this all the time from some of the young men and women who people may say, hey, man, this dude, there's no hope for him. Well, I've talked to some of the ones that they say there's no hope for. And there's hope. If you're breathing, there's hope, because I was one of the ones that I didn't believe that there was no hope for. And do positive things, and at the end of the day, you may take some young men and women out of the neighborhoods and into the workforce, or into become good citizens in the community by following your lead. Sometimes your lead has to be how you act and how you live, not what you say. So if you want to know a way that you can kind of ease out and do, all you have to do is start doing positive things. Now, we know that positive and negative won't mix together, and eventually you'll pull away. But the good part is, as you see, as some of your homeboys see you doing good things, they see you in a good place, they'll say, man, you know, I'm going to go holler at my homeboy. He works down here doing this. And you can take some with you, because I have. I have some young homeboys who's truck drivers. I got a homeboy in Louisiana right now. He's a pastor. And his motto was from Crypt to Christ.
Amen, my brother. Amen.
So I guess, you know, if there's any, you know, thing that I would like to really stress, that there is a way to do something different. It's just up to you. You've got to make a move. You've got to step out the box.
Amen. You know, so you definitely heard that message, my brothers and sisters. And I definitely say the same thing, you know, when my missus started talking to me about that situation, you know, because like I say, you know, I'm from Detroit, Brother Jackson, and when I first took my wife to Detroit, man, you did, she couldn't believe what she was seeing, you feel me,
right,
in the area that I come up in the ghetto in Detroit, you know, and the life that I was living real heavy back in the day. You know, I got one of my homeboys that was my right-hand man just trying to get out this Friday after doing 18 years, you know, and
right.
You know, we were doing things real heavy down there, and that's why I went on and wrote the book, The Streets Don't Love You Back, you know. And it's just something when a person has never been around that, then they see it and they look and say, wow, this is what goes on down in here. They see it from afar on the TV, but when they actually see it and be in it, it's like a whole nother world because they have not been there. And I think that scares a lot of people, you know what I mean? They fear what they don't know and what they don't understand, you know what I mean? And people doubted that I would change my life, you feel me? They gave me up a long time ago telling my mama, you ain't going to be nothing but a jailbird, a hustler, and this and that. And I flipped the script on them all, you feel me, when I got up to join in 94, you know, and became who I became. So, yeah, it's guys like you and me and other guys that has flipped the script where they said there wasn't no hope for us. But now God uses the man who they say has no hope. You know, that's what people don't understand. You can go to all the colleges and the university in America, you know, and get all that kind of education. But God looks for the man and the woman that has done been through holy hell and that he can mold in clay and say, hey, look what I did. And we can, in return, say, look what God done did for me. So this is the message I want people to truly understand. You feel me? I'm going to cut you down tomorrow. Don't mean you have to be down the next day, because God is a forgiving God and a wonderful God. You just got to want to do right. You make the first step, he'll make two.
That's right.
I agree with you, brother. I agree that, you know, you will have to make that step, though, first, though, you know?
Right. It's not jumping out the sky, you know? You have to be the individual to say, God, I'm tired. And I'm ready for you to lead and guide me into where you need me to be, you know, and got to be sincere about the speaking, you know. So that is what a lot of people are truly have to understand out here when you're trying to make that change in your life, you know. And it's a blessing to make the change. It's a blessing to come from a long way, from nothing to something, and able to show people that, because I was once this, Now I'm what God chooses me to be. You know what I mean? I'm somebody that's giving back, that's doing the righteous thing, and I'm opening up doors not just for myself but others to show that there's no 401k plan or no retirement plan being no drug dealer, no thug. You know, you can cut that out. If you're waiting on that plan, your plan is in the penitentiary or dead, brothers and sisters. So please, that plan don't exist. You know, so we
you
must...
You know what, let me just step in just a second there on that, too. You know, not only did other people was going to end up totally bad, but, you know, I believe that. I'll never forget, before I went to prison, back in 91, 92, I was riding in a car with the guy that was a former state representative and former senator. And I never forget, he called me Leader. And he said, Leader, what do you see yourself at in 6 months? And I looked over at him and I was honest with him. I said, I see myself dead or in prison for the rest of my life. So that's what I thought about myself. How many other young men and women out there just, you know, at the point of where they just felt like it's nothing else but death or prison for them?
Right.
And it tells you that okay, tell you that even when you give up on yourself, that God will make a way for he will take you, pick you completely up off the ground and turn you in a different direction, whether you want it to happen or not. I'm telling you, I'm here today, and I'm not supposed to be here if you let me tell you.
Amen, brother. You feel me? And that's what time it is. You feel we must, you know, continue to let these kids know there is hope. There is a change. You can be something in life. No matter how many people saying you ain't going to be this and you're a loser and a failure, you know, you must believe in self, and you must believe that God can help you make that change. So I'm definitely glad you spoke on that, my brother, you know. So with that being said, you know, we would just like to thank you for coming on the show tonight, Mr. Jackson, and we would like to thank all the viewers as well that listened in on the show, and we hope everybody got the message that you brought to the table tonight, you know. And I will pass the mic over to my missus for any last comments or anything like that, and she will pass it over to you.
Yeah, Michelle, I just wanted you to touch a little bit on what the lady earlier talked about, the Big and the Little Rock documentary. From what I understand, you were still in the gang when the first one was made, and can you let us know a little bit about how that became?
Well, the first one was made. In the midst of, Steve Dvorak would come over to the neighborhood sometimes, and he would show these pictures, and I actually had put a hit out on Steve, and I think for $10,000, because I thought he was trying to, you know, get in my space, and I really explained to you that's how I was back in, you know, I was very ruthless, and after a while, he came and showed me a board. He was showing his board, and I seen this board and seen knew just about everybody on the board that had been killed. So we just started talking, and he said, "Well, there's somebody that want to talk to you." And that's when I was introduced to Mark Levin with Blowback Productions, and that's how the first Bang and Little Rock thing. You know, that's how I became a part of that one. Now,
let me say real quick,
the hood, which is part two.
Go ahead.
You know, like 10 years later, I actually played a big part in making that happen because I wanted to show the difference in then and at that point now, per se. And so I helped make that happen to the extent that I called the police department and I asked them to be a part of it. And I never forget this one sergeant was like, "No, we won't do that." And I said, You know, well, when it takes place, don't say that it just showed one side. And with that, he said, you know, you're right. And law enforcement became a part of the Back to the Hood, and which showed that, you know, there's some hardworking law enforcement out there that's putting their lives on the line every day and night to protect our communities, you know, but. You know, with them not understanding, a lot of us in the black community, we're raised that, you know, police officers are bad.
Right.
And if you become a police officer, you know, you was like going to get jumped on. Or you know, that was the worst thing to be. And that's how a lot of us was raised. Well,
right.
I'm here to say that, you know, I've met and been all across the country speaking, and I met some law enforcement officers that were some great officers. And, of course, just like in the streets, we have some bad seeds in the streets that probably won't ever change. Well, you also have some bad seeds in everything that's going
okay.
on. But that should not paint a picture of what that is for. Law enforcement was created to protect and serve. So I also make sure that my kids have a clear understanding on what law enforcement do, and we try to have contact with them so they won't be afraid and think that they have to run when they see a police officer, because a lot of those police officers come right from, you know, now the communities that they're protecting. So, now the Back in the Hood actually mended a lot of things between law enforcement and the community, because it gave them an opportunity to see that it wasn't just police versus them. it was, you know, a lot of them were doing their job, and I went to jail because I was selling dope, okay? Not because the police was out to get me.
Right.
I was
doing
totally wrong, and I was the first to admit it, and a lot of us won't admit it. We always say, oh,
it's just dope.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
I wanted to go back just real quick to let the listeners know who Steve Nowoychik is. And at that time, he was the coroner, and he had to go pick up all these dead bodies off the street of these young men and women. And so he started taking pictures of them and putting them on big cardboard sheets of paper and bringing them and talking to other kids in the neighborhood. And I think that's kind of how you guys met. I'm not sure. Maybe you can fill us in a little bit more.
Well, and that is. That's basically how we met. But, you know, I'll tell you, I took a thrashing from the black community because of the black community was thinking, you know, this guy's out to make money, and you're helping him by even befriending him or talking to him. And some of the people, it wasn't because of who he was. It was that they thought he was out to get the money. And, oh, I tell you what, I took a thrashing, but this ended up being a good friend of mine over the years. And that's how we met, him showing the pictures and bringing people over, showing them what was going on in the city. Obviously, can I say, some of the blacks that was there wasn't doing that. When you talk to them about gangs, they were like, you know, what gangs? And I always tell this little story about this one mom. Who her son, I took her son to her house, and it was late at night, about 11:30 at night. And we went in, and we were dressed in all blue. He went in his room, and he come back out, and Mom said, okay now, baby, y'all be careful, because I'm hearing that this is starting to get some gang members over here. And we were the gang members, you know?
It's amazing
so
how naive or how
us
much denial people want to be.
Is in a big state of denial. And once again,
exactly.
I'm not talking about the river over in Africa.
Right.
Oh, man.
Exactly.
You feel me? I love that, baby boy. You know what I mean? You're keeping the 1,000 on the table. And that is true, man. You got parents that don't even, is right there with the gangbanger, and they don't even realize, well, my child is the ones out there raising hell. You know? Right,
yeah.
And the police telling you he raising hell, and you study say, oh, no, not my Johnny.
Not my baby.
Yeah, he in there, he come in every night, he hang with his friends, but his whole friends is gangbangers, man.
For all of them.
Right. You know?
Right.
Yeah, a lot of people is in denial, and that's exactly what our movement is about, the Streets Don't Love You Back movement, is to make people aware this is really goes on, and it don't just go on in the ghetto no more, to the top of the suburbs, you feel me, and back down to the hood. It's just one place. It's a global problem, you know what I mean? It's not just a ghetto problem, you know?
Right now, young white Americans, young white kids are the number one target now for gang recruitment. Because it's an already, you know, a lot of the black neighborhoods have already lived through this, as they lived through the crack cocaine and the others. So the next thing, you see so many young white kids on the internet dressing up in all of the blue rags and red rags and doing that and not knowing that if they ride through the wrong neighborhood that they could easily get killed.
Right, and you later turn into a gangbanger.
Yeah. So,
man. Go ahead, Lee.
I'm just saying, so at the end of the day, you know, coming from someone who really went through that, and I can tell you that's not something that I would ever want to do again. I would never want to hurt nobody else in my life because the concept, you know, of hurting someone else is just not with me anymore. That's totally out of my thought pattern. You know, I want to help everybody understand the real concept because they think that, you know, when they see Snoop and Crip walking and stuff and everybody making big money, these guys are making money and they're running
their
business.
They ain't out Crip walking on the street waiting for the 40 ounce to come to the store on the farm.
Feeding their family, and it's so easy. It's easy, guys. America is so easy to shoot. You can close your eyes and pull a trigger and kill someone. But you want me to tell you one of the hardest things in the world that I've ever done? I'm a single parent right now raising a young lady, and I've been raising her for the last 7 years on my own. That's the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life.
My man. But it's a blessing that you getting that chance to see what that's all about. Because a lot of these cats that was banging, they don't even know what that's even about. You feel me? They got kids all over the place and don't even know what it is to raise their child or sit by their child, do homework, tell them what's real. You feel me? So I have to take my hat off to you again just for, you know, being there and making that true change. You feel me? With God's help.
Well, then my hat go out to all of the young ladies that's single and raising young men. You know, my hat go out to you because I truly understand now.
Amen.
Yeah. You know, we do have one more caller on the line, Boyd, if we want to.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's get it on.
Yeah.
Okay. The last four digits of the number is 1073. Paula,
right,
you're on the line.
Yeah, 1073.
Yes, hello?
Hello.
Hey, how you doing, my brother?
Yeah, how you doing, Mr. Boyd and Lucinda? This is the world-famous Ice Age 2O, Harlem World Music and Video.
What's up, my man?
Yeah,
how you doing tonight? How you feel?
I only been on hold for about an hour and a half, but at the end of the day, y'all my family. I'll stay on hold for 3 hours just to be on your show.
I think you kind of came in there.
Appreciate it, man. You know,
yeah.
Hey, Mr. Jackson, that's one of our friends out of Detroit. You know, Mr. Ice, and Ice owns Harlem World Books and Videos in Detroit, a very good friend of ours. And you would like to ask Mr. Jackson any questions, Ice?
Pretty much. I was catching the end of the show. I believe we had the documentary. I believe we were selling that documentary. I never got the chance to look at it. It was a very good, seller at our store, and I just wanted to know pretty much a little bit more about the documentary and hopefully find a way where we could get it back in our store so we could, you know, show the communities what he's talking about and what was illustrated in that documentary, actually.
My man, I'm so glad that you listened to that, and I'm so glad that you connected with Mr. Jackson tonight to get
that pushed up
in Detroit as well, in our hometown, to get his message out as well. So thanks for showing that love, and I'll turn that mic over to Mr. Jackson now.
Okay.
First of all, if you befriend me on Facebook or one of those, I will make sure that I can guide you in the right direction to where, you know, you can get some CDs up there. The documentary is very powerful. You know, the part about it is it was not rehearsed, and it scratched the surface. I tell you, because it didn't really go, it scratched just the surface, but that's just going to show you how deep it was, because scratching the surface, it's touched so many people's lives, man, all across this country. I've gotten emails from young women and men in France and in Ireland, and I even got something from a person in Tokyo, and they befriended me. I got about four friends out of Tokyo who this documentary has touched their lives. And, you know, thanks to the internet and translation, I'm able to understand what they're saying. And at the end of the day, us living here in places like Detroit and Arkansas and California and New York, we're able to see this thing firsthand. Well, know that they're having, across the water, some of the same issues because of the internet. The Bloods and the Crips have popped up in all over the world, in China.
Right.
You know, so, brother, you befriend me, and we'll try to get you some videos up there so the people around can really look at this. And that's amazing, you know, because I didn't say nothing about Detroit, but there's a big group up in Detroit that I'm in contact with that's really trying to do some things that had some of the young men, and they're white, and went to Iraq, and they fought, but they're banging now.
Wow, okay.
And I've been kind of helping and mediate them doing something different. And these are young men and women that went to and then fought for our country. They came home and the love wasn't there, and they went out to search for a surrogate family also, you know?
Right.
So,
I
guess I'm saying that, you know, it's all over the world. And I just want to thank you, brother, for even, wanting to put the message out there. And I'll do all I can to get you some videos in your hand.
Right, definitely. Like I said before, I used to carry that documentary maybe a year or two ago. This is 2011. I think we used to have it like in 2009, 2008, 2009. And it actually sold very well. And, a lot of teachers came in to buy it, lawyers, and a lot of brothers from the street came to purchase that DVD. And for some apparent reason, that's one of the only DVDs that I really didn't have the chance to take home and watch. And but it sold very well, and a lot of people did say it was very powerful and whatnot. So I just wanted to get on the show and say I commend you for all of the work that you were doing, and I appreciate everything that you're doing, brother.
Thank you. I appreciate you for staying up late with us and holding on for the hour and a half and giving some more input on where we should guide our interest at. And we definitely need to get some videos in your community and in your shop, man.
Okay, exactly. And any other works that you're doing, please include us with it. We're here for the movement, for the Streets Don't Love You Back. And any movement that you have that's positive, and you know, we actually just trying to be a part of the family with everything. And Mr. Boyd, I appreciate you. And Ms. Lucinda, I appreciate you also, Ms. Boyd.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hey, we appreciate it, Ice Man. And I'll get you Mr. Jackson's cell phone number as well. And you and him can convert on telling that business up there. So I'll. You can, matter of fact, you can write that down now if you got a pen with you.
Okay. I think I'm kind of short of a pen here, Mr. Boyd.
Okay, I'll leave it on your voicemail at the work.
Okay, sounds good. Or you can put
get it
on
tomorrow.
Facebook. Yeah, Facebook either or. No problem.
Okay, man, I appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
And much love, man. And thank you again, man, for, being down
thank
with
you.
Me in the Mrs. Movement. And you keep up the great work up there. We'll be up to see my mother when the weather breaks. Right now it's kind of cold, my brother.
Oh, man, don't rub it in. Enjoy the weather when y'all laugh. Don't rub it in, okay? y'all have a nice evening.
All right, thank you, man. You have a good night, my brother.
Okay, I sure will.
All right, peace and love. Tell your wife we said hello, too. All right, we appreciate that tonight, Mr. Jackson. And out of that, we got a plug with our homeboy that's going to plug you up in the city and get you moving up there, you know?
Yeah, man.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to turn that mic back over to my missus and any last announcements or anything like that before we give Mr. Jackson his last words.
Right. We want you to join in next Wednesday night. We have Miss Alice Johnson. Her story is one of abuse as a young child, later as an early teen being kidnapped and exploited and used for prostitution and selling drugs and whatnot. So she's going to tell her story and how she was able to get away from all that. And then the following week we have Mr. Alexander Gibson, and he runs an ex-felon program, and we're going to talk with him about getting some information, job information and different things out to ex-offenders and how they can move positive with a better life. And then the week after that, we have Mr. B.J. Billy Joe Chambers, one of the notorious Chambers Brothers gang member out of Detroit back in the 80s and early 90s. And he just got home from doing a 20-year prison sentence for what he did back then. And he's going to come on and tell us the real story. So we have a really awesome.
I got a chance to meet this here brother not long ago. He's actually here in Little Rock.
Yeah, right. No doubt. Yeah, BJ and Low Rock. I just talked to him the other day.
And I tell you guys, y'all, he has a very powerful story also. I was actually locked up in Craigbrook, New York with one of his other brothers.
Which one, Willie or Otis?
I think he used to be the postman.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about... I met BJ and all that started kicking it when he came from Arkansas, you know what I mean, in like 79, 80, you know. So, we kicked it for a long time before they caught that case, man. Matter of fact, when they caught that case, man, I was at my mama's house, man, when the video clip came on TV and shit. I mean, excuse me, where Larry had taped them, they had all them ones and... Larry was like, well, we got all these ones. We got $500,000 in cash now. Let's give all the ones to the homeless. You know what I mean? So, yeah, man, that was a big blow, man, to them. You feel me? Because the feds wasn't even on them, you know, until that came out. Yeah. And that messed up the whole thing. So, yeah, man.
Everything happened for a reason, you know.
Ain't no mystery, man. Ain't no mystery.
You know, it's good to see that they went through and, you know, they took what this country deemed as punishment for what they've done and he come home and hopefully we can be a better country than we have in the past and forgive this brother and let this brother go on and try to live out the rest of his life and be a part of our community and not hold things over his head that he done what, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Bottom line, because that didn't happen like that, you know, it's been 22 years ago, you know, so definitely, yeah, he got a powerful message, and like I said, I just talked to him yesterday, and we doing our thing, we going to get him on the show, and also I told him, we'll try to get him the speaking engagements as you know, I'll be doing my thing, because yeah, that was my man back in the day, man. You know, BJ was my guy and gonna always be my guy, you know, until they throw the dirt down, you know?
Right.
Yeah, that was my man.
The show, and I'll definitely tune in at that point.
Okay, yeah, BJ gonna be on 26th, you know, February, you know?
February 16th.
Oh, the 16th, okay, I'm wrong.
February 16th, mm-hmm.
Well, I'll be following, the shows every week from now on. I
appreciate it, man.
Following them for a while. I've just been so in the midst of trying to make things happen here. And of course, my center here, we needed some things. We needed some people to step outside the box and look past the fact that I was a former, drug dealer and whatever. And,
right.
And coming and support us and helping making the streets safer and better for everyone.
Amen, you know. And that's what time it is, Brother Jackson, you know. And a lot of people, I think, has truly got the message, man, because your mom and dad and uncle and cousin can tell you all day long, don't do this, don't do that, don't put your hand on the stove because, you know, if you do that, you're burning, there's fire. But a lot of these kids nowadays, you know, they don't listen until they hear guys like me, you, BJ, and other cats that done been through this. You know, they want to hear this from people that done lived this life and done that, you know. So I think they definitely has learned now, and we must continue putting that awareness in a lot of these parents' mind and in their face and getting them involved in their own community. Letting them know, yeah, this does happen in your neighborhood. We don't care because you stay in a $1.5 million house. This goes on in your neighborhood too, period.
Right.
You don't know what your kid do when you off on your big business trips, you know. He's here with the red bandana on his head or the blue bandana on his head, and he ain't never lived no gang life in his life. He going on what he see on TV now because he ain't never had to live, you know, without no food in the crib. He ain't never had to, you know, be on no welfare. He ain't never had to go through no clothes, you feel me? So he's imitating life, as we call it from the hood. He's imitating something that he's never lived. And that's another thing we must cut within these children who's never lived that life, you know what I mean? Because, you know, like I know, when you go to penitentiary, you're going to get squirrels.
if you definitely ain't no gangster, you know what I mean, you're going to get exposed, player. So why put yourself in a position where you know you ain't that guy? Is that real talk or what, Lee?
That's real talk, man. I'm telling you now.
I mean, you're gonna get squalled. So don't even, you know, you're going to be, mom and daddy going to be sending that money up there. You're going to be buying, you know, at the store every week. You know what I mean? Don't get it twisted. You know, so, you know, you're going to be used as a pawn. I mean, because you know you wasn't that guy. You know you didn't have gangster in your heart. You know you didn't have thug in your heart. And you know you're not hard, you know? So you just up here to call a case because you're riding in the car with somebody else. So we definitely have to keep them awareness out here, man, because a lot of cats in jail, you know what I mean, you know, like I know, get schooled every day. Hate they up in there, you know?
Well, you know, that's the truth. And you know, at the end of the day, they should understand one thing. You know, there used to be a time back, way, way back, when you would get stripes for going to prison.
It's
not happening like that anymore.
No, there's no stripes.
You go to prison, you come home, you get stripes against you. Not stripes.
Okay. No, you got no lieutenant stripes.
Yeah. It's totally different, man. You know, and
right.
You know, in closing, I do want to say one thing, and this is to especially all of those young men and women who you know, who's spiritual, and the pastors and churches and bishops and all of you, okay? Remember, don't look down on those who go through these things like I've went through in my past, and don't look down at us because, you know, everybody, if God was to clear this earth of sinners, it would be barren, a cold,
amen,
barren faith, would be nobody left on this earth because we all are sinners.
Thank you, my brother.
Let someone throw the first stone, whoever has no faith.
Yes, thank you.
And there is not going to be any stone thrown because everybody's a sinner.
Right.
Everybody.
Don't act like because you're in the pulpit, you're going to be sitting by him half of the time because a lot of you in the pulpit, and I got to reiterate on that, man, what you just said, brother Lee. A lot of you guys in the pulpit, you know, your church is in the ghetto, three streets over. You got mama and baby starving. You feel me, putting their last in the pot, you know, while you driving the Benz and the Cadillac and can't wait to rush out to church. You know what I mean? You need to start doing something in your community and giving back to your community as well as the hustler and the gangbanger gives back to his community after he done served his time, you know? So don't think because you at the pulpit, you going to heaven. You feel me? Because God see all, my brother, you know? So I just
without
want
God's mercy, nobody's going to heaven.
Right. I just want to iterate that to the preacher man that's up in there, you know, with the Cadillac, can't wait to run out the back door, you know?
Right.
Yeah, so I definitely want to reiterate that because I done seen that happen so many times, Bud Jackson, you feel me? You know, in the neighborhood where 333 sober, you know, people starving and need something, and they take their little change and pay their tithe. But when they need something, the words that the pastor say is this here: "Oh, God will provide." Okay, my brother, you're right about what you just said, but I'm in front of you right now, and I just gave my tithes, but I don't have no food. So can you give a brother some canned goods? Can you do that? You know what I mean? So we must stop acting like we holy than thou and just understand that God has his grace on all of us, and you're not special because you're in the pulpit, you know, and stop looking down on people. So that's a message from Brother Jackson and Brother Boyd.
Right. Yeah. 100.
Mm-hmm. Ain't no mystery. Hey, you heard what Mr. Jackson said at the last of the singing. We're going to leave out with that. 100, my brother.
All right, my brother.
All right. It was great having you on, Brother Jackson. And like I said, I'm going to turn it back over to the missus with any last announcements before we roll out.
And just like everybody, to remember to log on to our website at www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com. join our movement and help us to spread the word, and let's work together so that, you know, state by state, we can, you know, go out and talk to these kids, talk to the youth and the adults and everyone that will listen and get this word out. You know, it's enough is enough. We need to stop the violence. You know, we need to stop the killing. We need to stop the drugs. And, you know, the drugs actually cause most of the violence. So, you know, we need to put our foot down and stand for something. You know, like we said, gangs and drugs have no prejudice. It's everywhere, high and low. And as we always say, education is the key to success. Doesn't mean you have to go out and work for somebody else. You can start your own business, but you definitely need to have that knowledge and those skills to be able to pursue what you really want to do. You get it in school or you can get it from somebody else. And you don't have to have a paid education, but get that education, read your books, talk to people that know and have been there and done that. And we just appreciate all the listeners, and we appreciate LaFelle for coming on tonight. And we wish him the best of luck with his rockin' group. And again, can you give him the information again, LaFelle, if anybody has any donations for your program?
Yes, we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and any donations could be sent to a check or money order to P.O. Box 2368, Little Rock, Arkansas, 72203. Hit me up on Facebook, MySpace, and we can go from there, and I can show you what we're doing. I try to put as much as I can online so people can view what our youth are doing here in North Little Rock and Little Rock. So at the end of the day, any contributions can be tax deducted. So reach your hand out and give us a hand to continue to help keep these streets safe. And thank you.
Amen. All right, you there, honey?
Thank you. Yeah, I lost you for a second. yeah, it's been a pleasure, Mr. Jackson, and hopefully we can have you back on again at another time. We're going to go ahead and go out tonight with a remix, The Streets Don't Love You Back, and just remember to join us every Wednesday night live, and if not, you can go onto our website and listen to any of our past shows. At any time, they're all archived. So once again, just have a great week, and we will join you again next week.
What's up, what's up? This RB checking in with The Streets Don't Love You Back. The movement is on, baby! Letting you know, me and LD, talking about that thug / drug life. Let me tell you a little lesson, players. In these streets, baby, they'll never love you back. Trust that.
In these streets, no one's above you. In these streets, no one can touch you. In these streets, love if you want to, but know these streets, if they don't love you, they don't love you.
Everybody's around here talking about all that thug life, player. Talking about that drug dealing thing. Tell you, baby, it's about getting your life together, getting your head on tight, doing something with your life, and stop destroying the community, and stop destroying yourself, baby. But when the people come at you, they come for real, player. Homeboys on my team done got 400 million before, baby. 100 million, baby. Now they sitting on death row, baby. That's where you want to be, player. Cause the drug game is washed up. The thug game is washed up, baby. They put it in our communities, baby, and they tell us off the top, yeah, you can make this, you can make that, but once they come for you, game over, lights out. Do what you feel, do what you want to do, baby, but join the movement. It's the streets, baby, they don't love you back. It's the streets, baby, they don't love you back. Come on, come on.
In these streets, no
keep track of knowledge, you feel me? Want all young brothers and sisters across America to understand that the drug game, the thug life, that's all washed up right now. Take heed, learn from players that done live that life, you feel me? Much love to my man, the real freeway Ricky Ross. Jeff stepped down May 4th, we sending you much love out there to Cali, you feel me? Much love to everybody across state to state who roll with the movement. It's time to open your eyes up, people. It's time to rise up above all this street thing. You feel me? It's a better way. Let's do this.
It's moments like this when my back's against the fence that I say, fuck the fence. Life is test, I gotta go and get a bit. God, he caught up the moon. Shit, I'm strong. It started from my home, so I'm at home with pressures. Are we all alone? When we born, we all alone. When we die, we need to get our shit together. We can make it if we try. Can probably make it if you cry. But I hate it when you whine. And if all is true, it's up, and you can take it when you die. I'm on my grind, cause all I got is time. But maybe it's enough. But if it's not, then let me know. Cause I feel like I'm on bus. I'm overstuffed with propaganda. They should slander and lies, try to slick the public and then wonder why there's crimes and murders on the rise, cause we ain't got a dime. Shit, I'ma hurt some fucking body, you see it in my eyes. I lie awake sometimes at night and ponder how to get ahead, jump out of bed paranoid, I'm going backwards instead. Feel like my feet is full of lead, cause I just can't move, freestyle life off the head, cause I don't know what to do. I need to make a couple moves. Ooh, I need to make a couple moves. I need to make a couple moves, but I gotta stay free, cause each and everything I do and say affects my seed. Decide what's the truth, separated from fallacy. Separate what I want from the things that I need, and try to make a way for everything to be okay. Stay focused on my goals, so you never stray away. Let the past be the past, and your future's okay. Pay attention to the present, living in it every day. Come
on. It's all be checking back in with you, like I said, it's that traffic knowledge. Then you young brothers and sisters understand that, hey, the street life, that's a dead issue, that's a dead game, that's all washed up. Let's get our life together, let's do what we need to do. Let's love more, hate none. RB, love, one. Much love to Lucinda, my manager, and my man LD. Let's do it. 100. Out.